Hi, and welcome, everyone. This panel is about women in science and technology. So first, I kind of want to poll the audience of the people here, all genders. Who's currently working in technology? Okay, and I got beaten up for this last year. Who's currently working in science? Okay, I remember it this time. What? Okay, who's in biotech? Woo! Okay. Are there any other fields that I missed that are kind of fringy? Yep. Yes? Oh, no. They're asking. Engineer. Okay, who's an engineer? Okay, good. Who wants to get into one of these fields? Okay, good. Got some of those. What other questions should I be asking?
I can't hear that at all.
Something about a science fiction writer.
What was the question?
Who here is a writer that's here for background material? Ooh, okay. Okay.
All right, and there were some other... No, go ahead. You
just
ask.
Curious as to anyone in middle school, high school, or college. So college students, okay. Any high schoolers? And anybody younger? So the rest of us are all old, right? Oh, so out of college. So elder, past college?
Okay.
All right. And we will have a Q&A session, so individual questions can come up. So I'm going to ask everybody to introduce themselves. First, though, I wanted to start. There was a great quote by Michelle Obama a couple months ago when she was speaking about her career, having broken a glass ceiling, and then she was asked, well, how many of the shards of glass cut you on the way up? And she said that, this was her exact quote, she said, women, we endure those cuts in so many ways that we don't even notice we're cut. We are living with small, tiny cuts, and we are bleeding every single day, but we're still getting up. And then she said that, women, we should own our scars. And, you know, the wounds may hurt, but they're going to heal with time. And as women, we must own those scars so we can encourage younger girls who are getting their first cuts. That was great. Okay, and with that, we're going to move on to introductions. Theta.
Name, rank, cereal.
Did I get Theta? Theta. Damn it. Okay.
Everybody does it.
Yeah. Theta, would you like to start?
Sure. I'm Theta Daniels Race, or formerly Dr. Theta Daniels Race, or Dr. Race, as my students call me. I'm a professor of electrical and computer engineering at Louisiana State University. Prior to that, same thing, prof at Duke University, and my area is electronic materials, particularly working on the solid-state physics end of things. So I tell people as an EE, I can't fix anything for you, but I sure can tell you about those electrons and molecules.
And I'm Jenny Gebhardt. I'm working at the Electronic Frontier Foundation in San Francisco, focusing primarily on consumer privacy and security. I come from an information school at the University of Washington, and before that, I actually came from Economics and International Studies. So if you have questions about crossing over or mixing fields in any way, I can answer those.
I'm Mel White, Dr. Mel White, and I am one of the second generation of women in technology. So I come from the days of the big iron in computers, I see the nods back there, the tape decks, the card decks, drop them and you're dead, that era. And I am currently doing adult education for senior citizens, teaching science and technology. Anthropology is one of my main fields, and I've just completed a degree in Egyptology. Wow. Next year, it's geology, because when you hit 65, there is the elder exemption. You can take courses at state universities, anywhere. All you have to do is pay the student fees, nothing else. Ooh. They are never getting rid of me.
Is that all states or just in certain?
As far as I know, yes, it is definitely in Texas and certainly worth checking out because because I've seen the senior exemption. You have to beat up a lot of people to get them to understand what you want. I went in to do it, and what they did instead was give me a job teaching senior citizens. I went, cool. But as far as I know, this is in many states. It is worthwhile checking out. If you have a grandmother, grandfather, parents, you think they might be into this, have them check that out. My dad at age 90 was doing philosophy courses because he was tired of sitting around talking to the old guys and wanted something different to do.
Yeah, that's cool. Thank you.
Oh, is this gonna, okay.
Hi, my name is Eternal Zan and I fix stuff. So I work for a small company. They do retail and online sales, and I'm the only IT person in our company. So I like anything that runs on electricity is somehow my job. Computers, servers, websites, security systems. I learned a little bit about phone systems because our phones keep going out. I'm on the ESO Network Dragon Con Report podcast, where my regular segment is helping people get rooms for Dragon Con, which is like the Dragon Con rooms group, if anybody in here got a room from that. And also, I'm a volunteer, and I've helped out with Tech Ops and the Dragon Con store, and I'm also happy that every year they interview me on the 50 Days podcast. Yay!
Okay, I'm Kim Stedman, and I work at NASA's Jet Propulsion Laboratory. I'm an engineer. I got my degree at Georgia Tech in aerospace engineering. And currently I'm working on the Curiosity rover, so I'm an uplink lead for that. And I'm also in development working on the Mars 2020 rover, which will launch in, oddly enough, 2020. And I'm helping define the ops concept and how we're going to do operations when we actually get to Mars in 2021.
So on the theme of cuts, kind of carrying forward from Michelle Obama, I'm kind of asking everyone on the panel, was there a time that someone was just cruel to you or something happened that you were just saying, it's not worth it, I'm going to go take sewing or something that was a more traditional field? And how did you deal with it at the time? Theta?
Oh. Yes, I'm an expert on bleeding. unfortunately, I'm not, but we survived,
but
right?
But you're still here.
That's right. Actually, even as opposed to referring to myself, for a moment I'll mention I just came from, was selected and very honored to be a part of a program called ELATE. It stands for Executive Leadership in Academic Technology and Engineering, and it's for senior women scientists and engineers. They pick a few people from all over the country. It's an arduous process to apply, and you get, you know, nominated as I was by the provost of our university. And long story short, there were just a ton of people there. I was just, you know, in a sense, peon as a full professor. There were associate deans and vice provosts and all these folks in higher education. But just as an example, there was one young woman there, as she called it, you know, not bragging, just saying she had been mega successful. And until she went and to this program and got together with all these women and all the topics we considered from, of course, you know, executive leadership options as well as things like Ilanka just mentioned, she said, I actually just said to her, oh, you look cool. I said, you just got the look, right? And the next day, because she was, you know, just looked just right for an executive leadership academic person, and she came over to me and she said, you know, what you said, I really appreciate it, because up until yesterday, I was going to quit. I was going to go do something else, just throw in a towel. And she had all the bells and whistles you could imagine in terms of, you know, titles and accomplishments. So I guess what I would say is, in terms of healing, you never know what one, I'm not saying it was just me, there were other people there, but she did come and thank me for, all I told her was she looked great. I mean, you know, but meaning in terms of just having the presence of being an executive leadership person in higher education. So I would just encourage everybody, there's plenty, you can talk to me afterwards if you want to hear the bloody stories, but just always, you know, you never know, if you, just a tiny thing you might say of, you know, hey, you look great, or great cosplay, or just tell me what you do, can make a difference in someone's life that may look like, you know, the all-powerful, successful person. That's what I say about it.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah, I think there's stories that come to mind are kind of extreme stories that really happen once, and then kind of the things that happen all the time. And you start to get used to them and you really shouldn't. And I'll share the thing that happens more than I can count. I'm a researcher in computer science and information science. And sometimes when I'm talking to male colleagues, I'm not sure if they're interested in my research or in me. I see a lot of people nodding. Yes, yes, you know. So, and I mean, it's happened so many times that, like, oh my gosh, you're into censorship too. This is so great. Like, finally someone wants to talk about this, and I get really excited. And then later I get some texts of like, hey, you want to meet at this club later? I'm like, huh, it's dark and it's loud. Not the ideal environment for discussing my research. Okay. And you start to realize, like, oh no, you weren't interested in my research. And that's always really dispiriting. Because, you know, you want people, you want validation, right? And it's, you think you found, like, this buddy, but, like, no, you didn't. You didn't. Unless you're looking for that, which is totally cool, too. But generally, I'm not. So, yeah, I think that just happens so often. I start to get used to it and almost expect it. And, like, now that's my default. Like, are you really a fellow scientist? And I can tell that happened to you guys, so I don't need to tell you. I don't think I even have any advice. Just, like, what I've tried to do is kind of surround myself with, like, the real buddies, the fellow scientists. Right. When you surround yourself with those people, for me at least, it's been so much easier to bounce back from those dispiriting moments, because I know, like, I've got my community, I've got my circle, and then, it'll keep happening, but it gets better and better along the way, I guess.
Because of my age, mine has always been an uphill struggle. From the time I was 6 years old, I wanted to be a PhD. I wanted to be a scientist. But this was in the age when the only women shown as scientists on television or wherever existed to be the prize of the man who was generally a reporter. When I told my parents I was interested in science, I was discouraged. You should be a ballerina. You should be an artist. You draw well. Mm-hmm. Through high school, I heard this same mantra. When I went out and got a degree in biology, they insisted I get a degree in something that I could teach, and by the way, I could do English as well, so I got a double major. It hit home really hard when I applied with my degree in biology at a research station to be a research assistant, you know, to go in the lab and help collect specimens and all like that. They gave that to a boy out of high school and set me typing. I got mad enough after this kind of treatment that I said nobody is, I would walk in with my degrees and apply for jobs, and because of the times, I would be pointed toward the secretarial pool. And I finally said, I am so fed up with this. I will take computer programming. I don't know beans about computers. I don't even think I like them. But the next time somebody asks how fast I can type, I will say, I cannot type, but I can program at 70 words a minute. And I did, and that was quite a game changer. But then even at that, I ran into constant stumbling blocks. My managers took credit for setting up the entire municipal website, doing all the security, making sure it was hack-proof. I knew some of the people in Cult of the Dead Cow. And when I set up a municipal website and a police website to be hack-proof, it was hack-proof. The managers took credit for that, and it so angered the manager out at Animal Control, because I also was one of the first people to put up animals for adoption on the web. And they saw an immediate reduction in number of kills that they did. They hated everything they had to kill. They hated killing. He was so angry at this that he got the local paper to do a feature article on me, which annoyed my supervisors no end. Also had the experience of secretary's husband coming in, and he was an engineer, and he had gotten a home computer. Didn't matter that I had a master's in computer and had been working on them, was one of the first women ever in PC support. He knew better about what kinds of programs would be good for their computers. They lived to regret that word perfect choice. I told them. Showing up at computer conferences and being treated as the wife and having to stand there and say, okay, now,
tell me the specs on that, what's the baud rate and stuff, and start talking technical to them before they took, they would understand that I actually knew what I was doing. Walk up to a display of boards, and I could tell them what each board was for. The final indignity was when the city had run over budget on a system that I told them they really shouldn't buy. They were $1 million over. That would have paid for many of our salaries for many years to come. And so they downsized the women in the department, except for the woman who was the lover of the department head. And at 55, there were nobody was hiring a woman in computers, because what could grandma possibly know about personal computers? So I went off and I got a degree in anthropology. As I was doing that, they said, gosh, you're asking some great questions. Do you want a degree in information science? Do you want a PhD? Got that PhD at 65, and that's how I ended up teaching senior citizens. Everything I did opened up a new career. And I'm, just because you've retired and you've been edged out of everything, once you own your own soul, you can do anything still. You don't have to be tied by that. I'm obviously a part of it.
So I feel like I was kind of raised to think that, like, I was raised to, like, you can do anything, you can be anything you want, and I feel like I was maybe had a little bit of the opposite experience, where I don't think I was prepared for, I think they're called microaggressions now. Like, that's what I was not prepared for. Like, I knew I was competent, I knew my stuff, and I also went to a bunch of different schools growing up. Like, we just moved around a lot, so I was like an army brat without the army. Mm-hmm. So I know how to be the new kid, like, that's not a problem. So going into a new job was very much, and I have had a number of jobs. I've been at the same job for a long time now, but in the beginning, I would move from job to job and see what I liked and try different things out. And I felt like, okay, well, I have this life experience. I know how to, like, fit in a new work environment. But for me, the thing I wasn't prepared for was surprise. Like, I would just start talking to people and be like, we're on the same page, right? But I started off in phone tech support. And so people would be like, saying basically everything but, is there a man I can talk to? You know, like so they'd be like, so their call would get routed to the IT person, which is me. And so they are talking to me and they're still asking me to talk to the IT person. I'm like, no, yeah, I'm the IT guy. You got him. We're done now. So... just little stuff like that, where people kind of like have this hesitation when they first start talking to me because they're waiting for me to pass them on to the guy. Like, that's been my most common experience, and I feel like I thought we were over that, but apparently we're not yet, and I'd like to live to see the end of that.
Okay, I just have a couple of quick ones. When I was going to college and I got accepted to Georgia Tech, I was, of course, going to be aerospace engineering, and I told a relative that I was going to Georgia Tech, going to major in aerospace engineering, and she said, well, you can't do that. You're a woman. You have to do something else. You have to either be a nurse or a teacher, and I could never be a nurse because I'd throw up if I saw any bodily fluids. So that wasn't going to work, and I really wanted to do the aerospace engineering thing because I wanted to work in space, and that, so I just ignored her. I have the type of personality, if you tell me I can't do something, well, I'm going to do it, and I'm going to rub it in your face. That's just me. Not everybody's like that, but yeah, some people are actually subtle, but I am not. So, and the other one is I was with a coworker. We had gone to a Titan. Titan's a moon of Saturn, and I'm sure you all knew that, though, because this is Dragon Con. And we had gone to a Titan science conference, and there was a minor league ball, you know, park right there. And we're like, well, for $10, let's go to the baseball game. So we're in the baseball game, and we're having fun, and two rows ahead of us, because JPL's in Pasadena, California, two rows in front of us, we heard these people talking about South Pasadena. We're like, hey, you guys from South Pasadena? We're from JPL, blah, blah, blah. And so we're talking, and the guy in between us looks, oh, are you guys here for work? Are you here for a teacher's conference? And so I looked at my friend and said, I will allow you to do this. And she puffed up her shoulders and she said, I'm an astrobiologist, and she's an aerospace engineer, and we work on the Cassini spacecraft that's orbiting Saturn for NASA. And he's like, oh my God, I'm such a NASA fan. We're like, don't talk to us.
So, sorry, you have anything else?
No, that's it.
Yeah. I want to talk about the 55 thing about getting a job at over 55. It was interesting because I was working in an industry for over 24 years and then had to go back into the job market. And I'm like, okay, I'm back in the job market. And I'd get my dad calling me and saying, did you find anything? I'm like, no, I'm sending out applications. He says, well, you know, you're over 50. I'm like, how was that helpful to me for him to say that? And he's like forwarding the article saying difficulty finding a job over 50. And I want to write back to him and say, it's difficult to find a job at any age. Okay, it doesn't matter if you're white or black or 20 or 50. You go through a ton of interviews before you find a job. So I did find a job, and I'm 58. And there are some companies who want to hire seniors or people that are over 50 for multiple reasons. One is because they might want contractors, and the contractors are already senior managers. And so they want someone with a little gray there because it gives them more gravitas to have it. And also there's companies, I won't say all companies, but some companies have learned that when you want to have a diverse environment, it doesn't just mean diverse in terms of race or religion, it also means diverse in terms of age. When you have some sort of a brainstorming group going on, you want to get all those different viewpoints. And Theta, you have something you often say about it might be the person next to you that's going to help you win the next prize. And it doesn't matter what age they are. So you really want to get as many different viewpoints as possible. I also have one more thing that I want to say, what you were saying about people that were talking tech to you and then you found out that they wanted to date. I've had the opposite occur. I've had so many times.
I would love that.
where do you find this?
I've had guys come up to me and they were flirting and they really wanted to talk and I'm like, I'm feeling like Scarlett O'Hara, you know, and Gone with the Wind, you know, there's guys all around me and, you know, I'm like, okay, where are you? Yeah, let's go talk. And all he wanted to talk about was what I did, which was making games, game development, because game dev, and like, oh, I can get close to Yolanka by flirting with her. And it got to the point where I really put up walls all around me. And I found that what helped me is to have a few people that I knew. I wasn't just meeting at the con, but people that were either relatives or friends. And I'd be like, let's go to lunch, please. Let's go to lunch. So I'm surrounded by people whose intentions I know.
Yes.
And that would kind of let me kind of recover my center and my self-esteem and then kind of go out. And also sometimes if they're, okay, let them flirt, you know, let them boost my self-esteem. But keep those walls. Don't let them get too close until I know them better. So Scott mentioned one of the topics that's probably going to come up is Google and this memo that was generated by a Google engineer. Yes. Someone else described. I've been talking too much. Someone else describe it.
Well, I read the whole memo. I read the whole memo.
I read the whole memo. Show of hands, who read the whole memo? Okay, yeah, so a bunch of people have actually read the thing. And So for those who aren't familiar with this, a guy from Google wrote this memo where he felt like he was being discriminated against because Google had groupthink and they were all leftists and the conservative point of view wasn't being welcomed. And then he had like charts and rationales for like how Google could improve. And his version of improving was basically women aren't very smart and we should stop pretending they are, but like, you know, with charts. But it was like this really high-minded, intellectual-sounding bullcrap that the first thing I thought of was like phrenology, which for those of you who don't know, which was like total bullcrap science where they were saying that African Americans were inferior because of the shape of their skull. So they're like, oh, look, I can draw a picture of a skull. Science. Yeah. So it reminded me of that, where, like, he clearly already had this idea in his head, and then he just, like, had to make up reasons to support it. But the way he did it was really was, he tried to make it, it did sound like really intellectual, to the point where I'm reading it, I'm going, that makes sense, that makes sense. No, no, no. And then he got fired. So, and then I think he's suing, and I don't know what's happening after that. Does anybody know?
Not yet.
Because Google was like, we can't support this guy. And I heard that, like, in Google, you have peer review. One of the articles I read about the article was that they have peer review, which means that your ability, like if this guy was my boss, he would have the ability to judge my performance and decide whether or not I get a raise. So I definitely agree with the ability to fire this guy, because you can't have this guy in a position where he's already made up his mind about who's superior and who's inferior, deciding who gets paid what. That's not okay.
I don't know how familiar you are with these groups. There had started out what's called men's rights groups. This has been going on for several years, decades actually. What is happening as they feel they are losing power, as things happen to them, they attribute everything to the rise of people of color, women, cats becoming more popular than dogs. it's anything but the fact that they are young, white, and jerks, and they think that they need to be in management positions. This kind of, to many of us, this will seem like an extremely toxic mindset where we are ruining marriage, heaven forbid, and they attempt to back it up. A lot of them are intellectuals, or at least kind of monotrack intellectuals, where they have this one goal that they are going for, and everything they read, and they can come up with papers. Yiannopoulos does this. They can come up with papers and facts and things like this that all supports their ideas, and it cuts everybody else out. It gives you no agency, and then they claim themselves as a victim. So in this case, you know, imagine trying to sit in a group with this guy and do anything. This was the point of another letter that I read on this. I've done it on internet, trying to deal with these people in a group to make a group decision when they are complaining about how unfairly they're being treated, and any suggestion, etc., that you make is very negative against them. Another outgrowth kind of this is the sad puppies. Everybody familiar with the sad puppies? Okay, yep, same kind of thought process, same group.
Sad puppies?
Oh, God.
I live in a cave.
Okay. Let me send a little light into your cave, but go scurrying in the back, because this tale started out in an attempt to game the Hugos. Now, we remember the thrilling days.
To game the what?
Hugos, the science fiction. You remember in the thrilling days when men were men and women knew their place, like Heinlein, Asimov, and all like this. We've had too many of these wimpy characters and women, God help us, showing up in science fiction, and people of color, God help us, winning awards. The Hugos needed to go back to the roots of science fiction and Flash Gordon and Manly Men. You're not scurrying back fast enough. And so they put forward these sad puppies. Puppies are sad because their science fiction has gotten so out of away from its roots. Slate of men and are people who did not, sometimes they didn't know they were nominated, who wrote manly men stories full of science and facts, and they were going to take the Hugos away from those terrible women. That backfired, but the puppies became a movement. They attempted again. They nominated somebody. Audience, help me out. Yes, John Tingle. There we are, Chuck Tingle. Go on Amazon, look up Chuck Tingle's books. Enough said. He gamed it too. It kind of backfired on them. But yes, so that's the sad puppies. You're still not cowering in your caves. we can expect, typically you see in anthropology, you see movements like this where the groups will start to be so extreme before a swing back to the center. The question being, how extreme can it go? And it's getting right out there.
And there's a lot of fringe groups out there. So in terms of how extreme will it go and how much of the society goes extreme with it.
Yeah, and unfortunately what we are seeing is because of the types of storytelling that we're doing. Think of movies, how people solve, and television, how people solve things. Two guys with a gun run in and shoot at things. Okay, we are seeing this kind of solution for problems in our society. It's not a good solution. We need some different stories out there. Women in technology are at a high risk of seeing this kind of thing developed, directed at them. You know, women writing gamer reviews, Gamergate, and things like this.
Oh, yeah.
But anyway,
that was a thing.
I can just share a quick reaction to the Google memo, and it's not one that I necessarily recommend, but in an effort to just be honest and share how I dealt with it, I ignored it. I devoted as little energy as possible to it. I read it. It was not well written. I don't recommend going to read it. Just don't. You're not going to learn anything. I read it. I was like, well, this is not news. Like, oh, people are using charts to fake science in a sexist manner? Like, no. So
that's never happened before.
And then I figured, kind of, especially as has been my strategy, again, that I wouldn't necessarily recommend, but it's mine, has this been my strategy since the election? I figure, like, I'm not going to let this stuff distract me from my work. To me, this is all part of the noise, and separating noise from signal right now is really hard in politics as well as in kind of the tech Silicon Valley world that I live in. And I think, you know, if they're going to distract me from doing my bread and butter security work, then that's how the terrorists win. And I know that we need engagement, right? We need people to engage. I am a big fan in some ways of the fact that you can't just fire these guys because they're going to go work somewhere else and they will still be in my industry. They'll still be in my field. I think to some extent, some level of engagement and transformation is necessary if we're going to make change going forward. But also sometimes I throw up my hands and I say, like, that's not my job. I have a job and I need to do it. So again, I would not recommend the la 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 method, but sometimes, you know, you have to conserve your energy, protect your energy, and that is what I have done with the Google memo.
Yeah, I agree with a lot of that, and just kind of something happens, oh, okay, and go back to work and do what I do, and not hear about these sad puppy things other stuff. With the memo, my feeling on it was that, okay, there was a guy who had some incorrect thoughts in his head, and he wrote them, and it was an internal memo at Google, and someone at Google then took that memo and made it public, and then the public went crazy. My feeling was whoever released it, maybe they shouldn't have. Maybe they should have left it an internal memo and discussed it internally. Yes, the guy had some incorrect assumptions, so engage and talk to him about them. The message that I think is being sent here that we need to be careful of, and I'm not 100% right, but this is what I'm thinking, is that if somebody has these incorrect thoughts in their head, encourage them to express them so that you can then engage and discuss things with them.
Yeah, I just want to say real quick, I totally agree. I think it's, like, if there's somebody who thinks that they're just by default better than everybody else, I want to know who you are, and I want you to say that out loud so that I know who I'm dealing with.
Yeah. And also, I mean, maybe someone is just a narcissist and you just want to know who they are, or maybe you can talk to them, and maybe they're a persuadable person, an intelligent person, or maybe not. But I always want to encourage people to communicate. That's where I'm at.
And there's one other aspect of that I, you know, that you run into, I'll throw this sort of, you know, monkey wrench in there, is when you deal with that with other women, right? Because I look at it sort of like we're walking warriors or fighting warriors, and even a warrior at times needs a break, right? Sometimes you have to pull back from the front, you know, replenish and go back out there and fight. And it's just a matter of what sort of works for you and in your sanity. And I love what Dr. White said about finding and keeping your soul. That's the core that you hopefully and prayerfully no one can ever disrupt. People will try. I mean, it's like, you know, if you think of, I'm trying to think of a silly analogy, I guess, and for the moment I think of, like, you know, a bowl of honey, you know, and ants will crawl on it, you know, and sometimes stick, and you gotta knock them off. But when you run into it with other women, as I have, it was recently, this thing I was talking about as well, this is a year-long boot camp. It was a hardcore workshop for a week, and we dealt with personality types, and you got analyzed and all these things. And there was one woman in our group. We had a core. It took 26 women. We divided into groups of 5 or 6. And we had to pick a name. And by the way, I'm proud of the fact they picked the name I suggested, which was Optimus Prime. and it's not because of the Transformers so much. I had like 10 different ideas, and I went, and it just hit my head. And I looked, if you look up Optimus Prime on Wikipedia, and I don't necessarily recommend Wikipedia as a professor. My kid, my youngest right there, when he said once, Wikipedia is evil, mommy. He'd learned that when he was little. but this time I did just put Optimus Prime in Google. And it came up and it said something like a being of high moral character with excellent decision-making skills, leadership, and strives for peaceful coexistence with all humans. And that was kind of the theme of the workshop we were in. But anyway, back to, there was a woman in the group and kind of, you know, word had gotten to me and to others that she wasn't particularly feeling comfortable because there were people at lunch who were discussing, you know, the election and you know who. And she had voted for Trump, right? And now, this same person, I'd say these things go hand in hand, but the same person also had, if you want to say out of naivete or just out of her environment, she wasn't around apparently a lot of people of color or people of different religions, everything. So every sentence almost would be things like, oh, I worked for this guy once, he was Indian, and blah, blah, blah. I'm not going to work for any Indians anymore. Oh, yeah, but I met this nice girl. She was Muslim. She was from Iran. She was okay. And I know this black guy, he got this job. I was applying for this job. This is her talking, not me. I was applying for this job, and the guy got it, and, well, you know, he was black. And at that point, we had heard all this. You know, it's bad when I was the only African-American person in that conclave, only two in the whole group anyway of the 26 people. And, you know, I'll just be blunt. When the white folks get embarrassed for the other person, you know, and you know. I mean, we were talking outside. There was a bottle of wine there because, you know, some people were upset with their results of their analysis. And mine was good, so I was cool. But and everybody kind of, and I went, okay, wait.
Have you ever had the experience where people, like, assume you're there as a quota?
Oh, yeah, let's do that. Let's talk about that. Excellent. Thank you.
Not to topic jump, but I was just hoping we could get to the quota conversation eventually.
Thank you. I'll give you my answer for that with respect to maybe others, how they look at it. In fact, what I did when this woman said that, I said, hang up a second. I said, and she goes, oh, I didn't mean anything. He was qualified. I said, No, it's no problem. It's cool. I'm not worried about that. She had really had some terrible things happen, so I didn't want to, like, bust her chops, honestly, but I went into my little soliloquy, which I'll do very quickly now, which is to say, when people get on you about, you know, the dirty word became affirmative action, right, or quotas or whatever, give them a little history lesson, which is very simple. Coming out of the 60s and the 70s, these programs that were named as such, affirmative action programs, even though today people think it's for people that look like me in particular, and maybe sometimes, you know, more for women, but it actually, these were actually programs in large respect that were put in place being utilized the most by white American females in terms of the actual percentage of effect. Now, not enough of an effect, especially in science and engineering, or we wouldn't be having this panel, right? When I look out across my classroom and I can count 1, 2, 3 women, you know, out of 55, obviously, the so-called affirmative action and opportunities didn't really, but as far as any measurable effect, it was primarily for white American females. And then along the way, you might even say kind of last in that line were people that look like me. But if you say it, right, what does the media tell you or just friends? Oh, it's giving an opportunity to people who aren't qualified, blah, blah, blah. Let's talk about college admissions. There are actually more legacy admissions. These are the admissions of people whose dad and granddad and whatnot went to that university than there are for minorities of any type, I can assure you. So when I tell people this, if you have somebody getting on your case about, you know, affirmative action, whether it's for women or minorities, the first thing I say to them is, what do you have against white women, many of whom are dear friends of mine? Not to fall into the many of my best friends are white, they are, but, you know, because their mindset is first on minority as in racially, right? And then we can get into talking about how there have not been that many even white American, and specifically was white American females. It didn't even extend to, you know, immigrants and such, right? So the bottom line I'm saying is that when people jump on these things about quotas in front of action, you can ask my husband right there. He's an attorney. Also, he has an MD. We're a geek family, right? Can't spell geek without ED. He's an MD and JD. And he can tell you about companies that illegally used so-called quotas to give the idea of we're hiring people and whatnot. Because after I say this, invariably somebody comes up to me and says, oh, I work for this government group, and they said we had to hire a woman and we had to hire a black guy. Many times that was illegal what they were doing, or they were using it. And I can tell you also in college admissions, you know, the thing that's come up to the Supreme Court, the young woman who said, like, she didn't get admitted to a Texas school. First off, she wasn't a Texas resident. And Texas, as you know, admits, like, their top 10%. Her grades were not really high enough necessarily, but she claimed that she was not given a spot in the university because she was white and these other black people got it. Note that in university admissions, much more is considered beyond race is somewhere in there, right? But a 4.0 student can maybe not get accepted, whereas a kid with a 3.5 or the 3.5 has a more well-rounded, you know, set of skills to bring to the table in admissions. So it's not all about that. So they're throwing up a smokescreen at you. When I look at what Jeff Sessions is doing, like I said, Dr. Paul Ray sitting there can talk about that better than I can. But they're throwing up a smokescreen when they tell you about, you know, affirmative action or quotas and not being qualified. They do it in terms of race because that gets people going, right? But that's not really what it's about. It really is, in my opinion, about people, as has been stated, being afraid of a loss of power. And the bottom line to me, racism, sexism, any other ism or obia, you know, homophobia, et cetera, is about people afraid of losing power. So they pin it on one thing. It could be your gender. It could be your race. It could be your religion, whatever it may be. But the bottom line is fear. And kind of the only way to deal with that, sometimes you got to fight it head on. Sometimes you have to engage in the conversation like we did with the lady in the group. By the time we finished talking, she was following me back to my room. We were hugging each other. She still was saying weird stuff. But, you know, you got to make a crack in that little, just chip away at it, you know.
Yeah, and that's, so that's key with people that do express some of these negative views. It's not just about saying, oh, you're an asshole, and walking away.
That happens too, though.
It feels really good. Yeah.
But if anything's going to change their opinion, it's going to be engaging with people, of diverse people, and realizing that they're people.
And sometimes you have to know when to step back. Mm-hmm. I mean, I did have a position once with a boss who was a nightmare. You know it's bad when you're a young starting out professor, assistant professor level, and full professors, so assistant, associate, and full in terms of rank, and full professors, grown men, many years my senior, are in my office talking to me with tears in their eyes. And like, I can't do anything, you know, to help them. So you know that's bad. That's a rough environment. We had an environment once where actually, I'll say technically because one had already left, but basically you hear about like a faculty suicide at a university like once every so many years. I was in the department once where we had two. In the 13 years I'd been there in the same department, okay? And at one
point... That's a toxic environment.
Oh, yeah. And the point where somebody told me, that, oh, you're working for so-and-so? And they just went, he doesn't like women, he doesn't like blacks, he doesn't like Arabs, he doesn't like Jews, he doesn't like Catholics. I'm like, oh, crap. You know, black female Catholic who went to Jewish day camp in the summers. Hey,
That's the kind of person I feel like, you know, if a woman walks in the room, the first thing they think is... they're not qualified to be here. They must be a quota hire. And I'm like, why is the default that you're like everybody else is smarter than me? Like, you haven't even talked to me yet. You haven't even met me, and you're like already assuming that I don't have the skills for the job that I literally was just hired for. Yeah. Like, there, I went through a process to get hired, and I had to prove in an interview that you guys should pay me to do this. And then there's, you know, hopefully not your boss or anybody who has control over your pay, but yeah, just like these, like I said, microaggressions, weird little comments from people that really have nothing to do with you, but tell you everything about them.
Yes.
And I'm happy when those people speak out loud because I want to know who they are. Like, I had a coworker, well, he's not there anymore for unrelated reasons, but sometimes I feel like I'm unprepared and don't know how to handle certain situations, and I say nothing, and then I have to think about it and come back later to engage. Because in the moment, I don't know what to say. Like, I had a white male coworker. There's a bike store. Where I work, there's like a bunch of stores. It's a business road. And there's a bike store. And he came over and he goes, I just saw something I've never seen before. I saw a black person buying a bike. And I didn't understand how this was a story. I was like, what? I don't. And he goes, because in my neighborhood, they just steal them. And I was like, I did not know what to say. I was like, this is not okay. Like, but I didn't know how to engage with him.
So
and then he got fired for unrelated
comeback.
Reasons shortly afterwards. So I never got to engage or finish the conversation. But in the moment, I just froze.
So what would be a good comeback? Now that you've had anybody.
Yeah.
Anybody have a...
Oh. Hmm? I have kind of a comeback story.
Okay.
Not specifically to that really cool story that he should tell at parties. But kind of a story I've been thinking of as we've been having this conversation. This is a colleague of mine, a male colleague in computer science, who did some like pretty badass advocacy for his female colleagues that I want to tell you about because it really, really impressed me. So he was working at a large telco in Mexico, and like the boss, one of the bosses just was one of these guys who thinks, like, women assumes that they cannot code, they cannot program, they are not talented despite being hired for the position that they are in. And the guy I'm working with now, he kind of saw this happening, and he decided to do some sly allyship. When this boss was kind of looking for solutions to coding problems, my colleague would pass him code snippets from GitHub, be like, hey, you know, check this out. What do you think of this? Maybe you can look at this. And then once the sexist boss said, oh, yeah, this is great. This is exactly what we need. Be like, boom, written by a woman. Whoa. So he slowly started to sneak those in and, like, still kind of chipping away. This guy was hard to deal with. I think it was the kind of thing you can't fire him for whatever reason. I don't know this telco. So then later, apparently, they were doing a huge UI redesign. By far, the best UI designer and engineer in the company was a woman. So my colleague kind of like teamed up with her and said, hey, we're going to do this redesign. I'm going to tell the boss that I did it. Just for now, we're going to keep it a secret. And then at the key moment, we're going to pull back the curtain and reveal that a woman wrote this. And he did this. Apparently, the UI redesign was a huge success. Surprise, a woman wrote it, mic drop, and apparently they reformed this guy to some extent. But even that, and, like, I was thrilled by this story, but also saddened that we have to, like, trick people and, like, surprise them with this. So, you know, what is a good response? Maybe there is none, but that was one that was creative and seemed to work in the environment that my colleague was in, which is not all environments. And I think often, like, the best, a fine response is, like, I don't know what to do. I'm thinking of a lot of stories when we talk about quotas kind of being assumed that you're part of a quota, being told directly, hey, you're on this panel so we don't have a mantle. Like, that's happened to me several times. Like, hey, you're not a dude and you don't have a beard. Come be on this panel. And how do you respond? I don't know. Yeah. Like, I don't have a good answer. I just do this.
Yeah. I can't believe you said that.
Yeah, but I want to be on this panel, so okay. Yeah, I see somebody who might have a better idea than me.
And so basically, oh, hey, it's Mike. What she would say is just, why did you just say that to me? Or if it was someone that was like on her level or below, she would say, I can't believe you just said that to me. And she'd base it on the situation. It's a lot harder to deal with if it's a superior or if it's at work where it has an environment where everybody's very, like, you know, straight-laced by the book. It's a lot harder. But what she said is the thing that she... Even if it didn't change the other person's mind, they didn't talk about it, nothing, just the fact that she wasn't silent made her feel like she was doing something helpful.
Absolutely. Thank you.
I just say, I don't understand, and then get them to explain themselves. Say, wait, I don't understand. I just give them a confused look.
So you can understand more of their thought process?
Yeah, and then they have to explain it. And then I can have a conversation with them.
Yeah.
Or so they can understand their thought process, too. I've also had a lot of, like, well, you know, we needed to bring a woman or a person of color. Not that you're not totally qualified. Like, are you saying what I think you're saying? You're saying two things. So I don't understand would be a great response to that.
I will fight it very quietly in a very ladylike way. We had this happen when the first black fireman was hired at the city where I worked. and it was he got it through affirmative action, and the word went through the programming crew because we were on the same floor. Don't talk to him. He's just affirmative action. That got me so mad. Now, the fire department's office was right next to the programming pit. I'd stick my head in and go, "Hi, guys. Hi, Sam." Every morning. And pretty soon, Sam would stop by the programming pit. "Hi, Mel. Hi, guys." After a while, everybody got to talking. It came home to roost when we had a fire. And the kid next door, it was a black family, and there was family violence. He was accused of setting the fire, and he had. And the woman next door said, the lady who reported it there, you know, or I actually didn't know who started it, but the lady over there is a racist. The fireman she talked to was Sam. He said, "Lady, I know her." That wasn't it. But that's the way I tend to address it. A lot of times, not only people of color, but disabled people. And in anthropology, this is called see them as being human. If you see that other person as human, you can influence others around you to see them as human. The poison here is not the one person. It's that they will create culture.
Yes. Yes.
And if you see and acknowledge others as human, transgender, whatever, by seeing them as human, you empower the others around them who are willing to see them as human, and you can change culture.
Beautiful.
Now that's my approach.
Beautiful.
Everybody has their own stuff. That's where it works for me.
So I wanted to give a chance for questions and stuff. Did anyone have questions or comments? Hand her the box.
It's not as much of a question, but I just wanted to bounce off an idea that Dr. White mentioned in her introduction, when it seemed a lot of people were interested in the idea of seniors being able to take college courses for free. And the idea that I wanted to kind of throw out there for anyone that knows any high school kids, and the idea of getting more girls and kids interested in science and technology in general. I was very lucky enough 20-something years ago when I was growing up in Southern California, and I believe several states do this, most community colleges offer a dual enrollment program. Mm-hmm. So if you have any high school kids that you know that might be interested, I spent my high school summers taking college classes in physics and biology and things like that to get ahead. So I just wanted to throw that out.
And can I
to follow up from what you said, I want to encourage the ones who can get girls into science are the grandparents. Parents are overloaded with every freaking thing in the universe. Grandparents often have the money, the time, and the interest to find things to take the kids to. Or even if you don't have the money, take them out bug hunting. Let them go chase grasshoppers. That the older you are, the more power you have to help make this possible. Not so much the young teachers, older people, think about it.
That's fantastic.
Well, I've always thought that the gateway drug to science and engineering is reading science fiction and watching science fiction. And so if you encourage kids to read, especially read the science fiction, the good science fiction, then when they're interested in that, then the next step for them is to be interested in science and engineering and math and everything.
Do you have any like specific favorite book or show you'd like to recommend?
Well, not really. I mean, I'm of course partial to Star Trek.
Yes! Thank you!
And you know, I love Star Wars too, but the thing that Star Trek brings that Star Wars doesn't, Star Wars is space fantasy, it's not science fiction, but Star Trek, it was so forward-looking, and you have the whole concept of infinite diversity and infinite combinations, and that's what we need for our future, and I still believe that Gene Roddenberry was on the right path there.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so this kind of actually goes on to the...
Can't hear you.
This was kind of going off of the question that was brought up before. I've read in a couple different places and statistics that we're getting a lot more college graduates that are females in STEM certain degrees and things, but that where we're getting more of the turnover is in that young age.
Yes.
Of their career. So even though we're getting more and more graduates, we're starting to drop off once they kind of hit that age where people are starting to start families of their own, or even where they start having trouble moving up those chains. What are some ways that you would suggest to either combat that for someone who's a young professional like myself, or what are ways that you can help support other people who are in that position?
Can I throw in a two bits on that? Actually, even backing up to girls, anything is beautiful. Thank you so much. I think we're related. But even growing up, my parents were elementary school teacher mom, high school math teacher for dad. And my mom's mantra is, today's her birthday, as a matter of fact. Can't say how old she'll come out and beat me, but in her 80s. Her mantra was exposure. So as Dr. White said, take them out and see bugs, right? But the drop-off does occur. There it's actually data to show that whether it's like the middle school range, it's shown for boys versus girls, it's shown by race and so forth. And if you, one of the things we always talk about is have the data. So just like this, you know, the crazy Google letter, this person had data, right? You can also find real data as to, as you said, these drop-offs and what can you do. One thing I would say is, as much as we've talked about, you know, certainly the pain, there is also the pleasure and the accomplishment and, you know, I love science since I can remember. So getting kids exposed, even if they're not into science. We had a session for middle school girls back in Baton Rouge where they brought in like 400 middle school girls. And if you haven't seen it, I got to throw out there, see the movie Hidden Figures.
Oh, yeah.
And show it to a friend. I mean, I'm not of the generation where I was the age to be, but I relate to some. I was bawling. I had to go in the restroom, and my son said, "Are you okay?"
Fine.
Ran, you know, because there's so much I relate to. But back to your question is, there is data you can look up. I'm sorry, I don't have the citations off the top of my head, but maybe we can talk later, where you can find where those drop-offs are. And what you've got to do is, as they say, hit people where they live. So if it's little kids, it might be taking them out just to see stuff. You know, there's plenty of free stuff in the libraries, right? If it's young women in college, you have to make sure that they get exposed to this. This is wonderful. There's so much of this that I can say, at least for me, and others may agree, we didn't have, you know, at all. Almost every conference that I go to, they talk about work-life balance for women, even though they don't talk about it for men, but it's coming, right? And so you have to give people that safe space to talk. Like where that young woman says, you know, I really want to be X, but, you know, I want to have the family and do X. And I'm like, you can do both. Why not? Sometimes it's just a cultural thing. In her family, it may be that the women stayed home with the children, and she's the groundbreaker not to do it. In my family, I think even going back to slavery, if you will, hardly anybody got to stay home. I mean, you had to, you know, I think my grandmother did at one point. But in our family, the culture was as such, you were proud to go and do something because it was something like, you know, my folks, the big thing you could do in New Orleans as a Negro, as we said at the time, was to be a school teacher or work for the post office, because these were steady jobs. And so then to have the next generation that can go on into, you know, get PhDs, and I'm telling my sons, we have more degrees than a thermometer in this family. Somebody go make some money, start a company. Seriously. So you have to find where those breakdowns are. My husband and I have actually gone into our son's schools and talked with the teachers at certain grade levels and said, very honestly, we understand that many times X is not expected of black males, but we expect this of our son, and we want to make sure that you do as well. And you can do the same thing for your daughters. So for whatever reason, you've got to find maybe where that young person or young woman is starting to get a little iffy. And if you can, as a friend or if it's just you, find things like this where you have a safe space to talk to people. And I'm more than happy, people, I live on email. I'll give anybody my email address. And if it's something I don't know, you know, I can maybe put you in touch with things and people that can help you with that aspect. Because these are real issues and hard questions that women have to deal with many times over and beyond their partners. Even if you have a partner that's female, as a friend of mine just said, she has a wife and she goes, but she's useless, you know, in terms of, even though she loves her dearly, I guess, but in terms of making those decisions. So you have to find, if you will, like-minded people, but like helpful people.
Sorry. Oh, just one thing quick. You mentioned Hidden Figures in the movie. The movie's fantastic, but if you haven't read the book, you have to read the book.
Yeah.
Because it is so much better, and it covers such a longer time frame, and it really shows you how amazing these women were.
And the granddaughter of that woman is a school teacher in Baton Rouge. I got to take a picture with her. She's the granddaughter of the main character. Oh, I'm sorry. Aldi, it's helped me. The main character, the mathematician. I can't believe I'm sorry. Was it? Yes. Thank you.
It takes a village.
Yes.
Real quick announcement. I'm actually on the next panel. Hello. Sorry. I work for a company, a tech company in New Orleans called LookFar, and we just opened up nominations for our third annual Ada Lovelace Awards, which celebrate women in tech. And we're expanding this year to go beyond New Orleans, so it's the entire Gulf South region. So Florida, Georgia, Alabama, Mississippi, Louisiana, Texas. So if you know any women in those states that are deserving of this award, I've got a clipboard that I can pass around if you want me to shoot you an email post-DragonCon, because I know how this gets. You can also, if it's easier, there's a QR code on here that'll take you to the page if that's easy, or you can go to lookfar.com and it's on our homepage.
Thank you.
Okay, next.
Okay, so I'm an IT security. I'm an IT security engineer. I work at Carter's, which is a baby clothes company. So I was having a conversation with one of my coworkers, and I let them know that I did not want kids. And their response to me was, "Well, how are you going to benefit society? Like, well, what good are you in society?" And even though that kind of jarred me at the time, throughout working with that person, because you can't just walk off and quit or anything like that, but I changed his mind. And I was wondering, because I know that you guys probably go through things like that, as kind of a ray of hope into all of the things that we go through, what is a time that you've changed someone's mind? Mm-hmm. And how long did that take?
Mm. I had somebody, one of my first jobs was in tech support because I was working in marketing in an office before that, and like I said, I just fixed stuff. Like, I didn't realize it was a skill until I realized nobody else was doing what I was doing. Like, they would have we need to do this, we have this problem, and I would just figure out how to make it happen. And then that happened enough times that they were like, oh, there's this other job opening in tech support, we think you'd be good for it. And that was kind of my start in the field, because I do have a degree, but it wasn't in computer science. Like, I took classes later, but a lot of what I do is just self-taught, and my employers don't care. They care that I can get the job done. They haven't really cared about paperwork I may or may not have in certain areas. And so it turned out, I didn't realize, this was a big state agency that I was in. It was the biggest state agency in the state of Ohio where I was doing tech support, and I didn't know I was the only woman. And apparently, until we had a staff meeting, it was like 30 guys from all over the state and me. And that's when I realized I was the only woman. And then it was probably a few months later after that, somebody just kind of came up to me and told me, they were like, the last woman we had 5 years ago, she wasn't really good, but I think you've really proved yourself. I didn't know I was supposed to be proving myself. I just thought I was supposed to like show up and do my job like everybody else that works and has a job. So I think that was kind of an instance where I apparently changed somebody's mind, and that was good, but it was not on purpose. I just, you know, I guess it was just living your life the best way possible, and it's nice if other people just kind of happen to notice that.
You just approach what you can. I mean, I have the optimism. I want to have the optimism. I'm a person who, I believe in God. There's a faith, but... and I don't mean a but to that, but essentially you have the optimism of changing and affecting the world, but then sometimes the world might just be two or three people around you, and that's good enough. You just be the best you can be, and you may never hear about it, but they may find, oh, that little girl, as they may think of you, right? That little girl is not so bad. Or other times it can be years. I have a colleague who is in his 80s, and he talks about, he's a white male, and he says, you know, when he grew up, the N-word was pretty regular in his family. He grew up in, you know, Brooklyn, and long story short, he had a friend, a black friend, right, but who over many years talked about things. They were close enough. It just, he is more like fighting for women and minorities and everything than I think I could even muster, right? And it took many years for that. So you don't really know, but all you can do is, you know, as Dr. White said, protect your soul. As Jeannie said, find an ally, because actually a thing happened where we had to deal with someone. We needed to not get a job, And I knew if I talked about it, it would sound like, oh, the whiny black person. But I told my colleague, and he did sort of like, you know, Jeannie's colleagues, and sort of let the other folks know this person isn't right. Sometimes it can't just be you. So just be aware of, and then sometimes you just have to stand for what you are and believe. I mean, I had a colleague recently I met who said when she was a small kid, decided not to have kids, you know? And that's her decision and her right. So if they don't agree or they say something stupid to you, you just put it on your stupid board. You know, there's a, so it's just put a little mark there by their name and you know, hope they get better because it's not you, it's them.
Yeah. One brief additional note. We're talking a lot about, you know, convincing other colleagues who are not perhaps women or people of color. Also convince other women. Oh my gosh, I've had, the first thing I thought of was I convinced a friend that she could code. At the same time, she convinced me that I could code, and it was beautiful. We're best friends now. We wrote a script. Our professors in grad school told us it should take like 5 minutes. We got it to take 10 seconds. We were like, oh God, this can't be right. What did we miss? And we're like combing through this. We're like, no, we missed it. We eventually showed it to professor's like, okay, you got to help us out. What did we miss here? I know we're not supposed to debug code with you because your time is very valuable. But like, come on, 10 seconds. He's like, can I use this? It's like, yes. But this friend and I, you can kind of support other women around you, right? Like having allies, I think that is a huge part of the battle. I know I was told my whole life that I just wasn't very good at math, and I believed it until I wrote that 10-second code. And now I am good at math. But it is, and I needed someone to help me, and it's often another woman. Yeah.
Well, I think just being at places like this, this is why I talk at a lot of science fiction and Doctor Who conventions, is because just that people can see that women do this job. Mm-hmm. Because when people think a NASA engineer, they usually, you know, they think a white guy, older white guy. And so I just like to get out there and show that women can do this. Anybody can do this. Because I think if I can do it, anybody can do it.
Person with the box. Just stand up.
Yeah.
Just stand up.
He's changing batteries or something?
Yo, you're loud.
Over time. Okay.
Yeah. Stand up. Okay. Speak loudly.
Yeah. It's kind of an observation because I have a daughter that's at a STEM school. And she's a senior now. Thank you. She's a senior now. I love this thing. Okay, she's a senior now. So it's a little... But I have to encourage you. One of the things that when you say you're sending your child to a STEM school is that the S of the STEM seems to get lost, and it's always the focus on, at least with her school, is the technology, the engineering, and math, of which she was interested in none of it. So I had to explain to her that there's more to being a scientist than just those three things. She wants to be an anthropologist.
Yeah.
And there's geology, and there's the biology, and there's all of that. And her school wasn't getting it at first until her last 2 years, and they started broadening the whole science thing. So I think that really needs to be emphasized sometimes, that science is not just the math, the engineering, the IT, and all of that, because there are a lot of girls that aren't, that's where you lose them sometimes.
Yeah.
That's just kind of a comment, so.
Don't forget STEAM. When they do STEM, now we're splitting the A for STEAM. And so I've had talks where I've told girls like want to be a chef or a fashion designer or, you know, a landscape artist or anything. All of those areas, there was a session, unfortunately I missed it, about women at NASA. Maybe Kim can talk later.
I was on that.
Okay. But I was at a talk once where another woman from NASA had these young girls yell out what they wanted to be, and she said everything they had named, you know, people in fashion design, people in the arts, people in, you know, culinary arts, all these things are part of jobs that are done, for example, at NASA and other places. So the A in STEAM is very much linked to the ST, you know, EM. You just have to find out where, and we can talk later.
What is the A in STEAM?
It stands for arts now.
Arts.
They're saying
okay.
STEAM instead of just STEM.
Okay.
If anybody's... Oh, sorry, go ahead.
Last comment.
just if anybody's interested on the way out of anything like Dragon Con related, I talked about in my intro, Marriott carpet, Dragon Con rooms, Eternal members, any of that stuff, I have like cards with resources on it.
All right. And I've got flyers for Freaknik, which is the... TechCon in Nashville that'll be in about a month. Yes. And so, closing note, women in science and tech. So we seem to have this older layer that is sometimes resistant, but the younger layer, we're still rising up anyway. Mm-hmm. So on that note, keep up the good fight.